Sounds good. From our studios in beautiful North Florida, celebrating 2 years of color commentary, it's In Black and White. And now your host, the baby-faced assassin of freedom, Jerry Brooks.
As distinct as the Bogadas.
So, running for president, we're putting a big hit for New York. We think we can win New York. When 500,000 migrants have poured in and take over the parks, they took over your hotels, they take over everything. It's no good. And you know what they've done? They've destroyed so many people.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, patriots of all ages, welcome to In Black and Right, the new definition of color commentary. I am, as always, your host, Jerry Brooks, the baby-faced assassin of freedom, and your tour guide through Joe Biden's severely whacked version of America. It's good to be back. I'm afraid I was gone a good chunk of last week and part of this week due to some medical treatment, but I am feeling a whole lot better and ready to get back to work on the continuing adventures in podcasting. I wanted to start off today with what happened yesterday in New York. Now, Donald Trump does political jiu-jitsu better than anybody I've seen in my 30 years of being in the political world. Now, he spends 8+ hours in the courtroom with the judge, with a corrupt judge, with a God complex. You've got a district attorney in Alvin Bragg, George Soros bought and paid for slave, to do his bidding, and it is so messed up on so many levels because there is no way, and I do mean no way, that Donald Trump is going to get a fair trial, air quotes here, in New York City with a New York jury. 87% of people went for Biden, and I don't get into some of the really whacked out details of this, but it amazes me that Trump, with all that energy, he says, hey, I'm going to a bodega, as opposed to Bogota, which Jill Biden can't seem to pronounce right, and I don't even think Joe will even try it. But anyway, so Trump goes, after the trial, goes up to Harlem, of all places, and goes to a bodega. Now, for those who may not know what a bodega is, it is the New York City equivalent of a convenience store. They're small shops where you get snacks, some food, drinks, whatever. And I saw them all over. They're all over New York. I've been to New York on a few occasions, and they're just there. These are small business people who sadly are under the grip of crime. And I mean out of control crime. And with a district attorney who won't do anything as far as prosecutions, I mean, it's crazy. This is a city that is so prime for divine judgment, I don't even know what to do. I mean, we saw New York, a 4.8 magnitude earthquake. New York never usually doesn't get earthquakes. It's not like California. And then, of course, a couple of days before that, you had a storm that hit New York, and a pretty bad one. But there are pictures of a lightning strike at the torch of the Statue of Liberty. That was wild. I mean, and it's just within 2 days of each other. And now you have this nonsensical, idiotic railroad job of a trial, which is corrupt to the core. And I'll get into that. But before I do, I just wanted to say, hey, send us email. We'd love to talk to you. We'd love to interact with you. You can email us at inblackandright@gmail.com or at our website, inblackandright.net. You can also check out our online store. We've got all kinds of patriotic and Christian merch. You know, a little swag for you, a little all-American patriot swag. And hopefully you can also have a chance to contribute to our upcoming tour here in the month of June, heading to the Pacific Northwest, where I got my start in media. We'll be heading to Portland, Seattle, and Northern Idaho. So it's going to be fun. And I'll be doing a lot of stuff online, some live streaming, mostly on our various social media. So it's going to be fun. And so we're looking forward to that. And let me see. I think that's about it for right now. So anyway, folks, we've got Trump at this bodega up in Harlem. And it's amazing to me. And you heard it. You know, 4 more years. 4 more years. From the folks in Harlem. Harlem. I mean, you want to talk about as minority and diverse as that is? Oh, yeah. It's pretty wild. It is absolutely pretty wild. And on top of that, you know, the cheers for Trump. He's there. It's retail politics on the fly. And it's great. He's shaking hands with people, signed an autograph or two, met with the owner of the bodega and other business leaders in New York. And Trump is known. They know these guys who have these bodegas and other small businesses throughout New York, all the boroughs. They know Trump. They know who he is. They know he's got their back. And I'll tell you, it's wild. And on top of that, just looking at a story here from the National Pulse, and the headline, thousands of New York City bodegas just issued a stunning statement backing Donald Trump. Now, I wouldn't necessarily call it an official endorsement, but it is about as close to an endorsement as you're going to get, at least with New York. And I just want to read a little bit from the statement from these business owners. And they loved having Trump. They were hosting him, and he listened to them like he normally does, and he is definitely on their side. But this association, this group of business people, started out in their statement, and I want to just read just a little bit of it, not all of it, but it tells you exactly where these folks, where their mindset is, as far as being able to stay in business. Because it's bad enough when you're dealing with the crime you already had, but now you throw in all these illegal immigrants who are all over the place. And I mean all over. Not just in Manhattan, but they'll go to Brooklyn, they'll go to the Bronx, they'll go to Harlem. They'll go whatever to go and wreak havoc. But anyway, just to start out from this first paragraph from the statement, quote, the Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg, only backed off after an angry public campaign from store owners and their supporters united behind Mr. Alba and his constitutional rights. Now, this makes reference to a case from a couple years ago where a gentleman named Jose Alba was arrested by the New York City Police Department and was going to be charged with murder because he defended himself and his business against a convicted felon. And Alvin Bragg, the district attorney, was ready to take Mr. Alba, who was 62. He's in his early 60s. He's trying to defend himself against some crazed, idiotic black thug. And for his business and for his very life. And Alvin Bragg tried to charge him with murder. Just to tell you how messed up this piece of work is. But anyway, continuing on in the statement. The Bodega and Small Business Group appreciates President Trump's support on behalf of tougher enforcement for retail thieves that are making our stores more dangerous and less profitable at the same time. President Trump's visit and support comes at a time when our state legislators have refused to strengthen the laws against repeat retail theft offenders. Legislative Democrats have formally rejected Governor Kathy Hochul's proposal to make it a felony for assaulting a retail worker, a reflection of how the party remains split over criminal justice issues and how to address voters' concerns over public safety. And that is true. They won't do it. Now, here in the beautiful free state of Florida, and I will give Ron DeSantis, our governor, credit where it's due. You don't come to Florida and pull crap like that. You just don't, because he's already signed major pieces of legislation that, one, protects against and stiffer penalties for those who engage in retail theft, but also going after the squatters issue. Instead of making it a civil matter, he signed a bill that made it criminal. And, oh baby, there are some people who are definitely not liking it. The ne'er-do-wells and other various forms of, well, vermin, going after, taking over people's private property. Nope, don't do that in Florida, because you will be arrested. You will be charged, and there are 67 county sheriffs who will be more than happy to take you to their respective county jails, and so you can sit your sorry carcasses in there and rethink how stupid you were. Play stupid games, win stupid prizes. So this trip to the bodega yesterday by President Trump up in Harlem was huge. It was huge, and it was just, wow. I mean, it blew my mind, because Trump had a bad day. He had a really bad day, because now they're still trying to come up with these jurors for this trial, and there are 7 so far in this. Now, I think they'll be doing the rest. I think they've got, or will have soon, the rest of the jurors seated. But I'll tell you, it's just kind of weird. Well, actually, it's not kind of weird. It's New York. Forgive me. But some of these jurors, or attempted jurors, this is just absolutely wackadoodle. Okay, I mean, you even have far-left activists who are attempting to infiltrate the jury pool. Even Fox News is admitting this. Okay, and Jesse Waters on his show was talking about this. And it's wild. It is absolutely the wildest thing. I'll let Jesse Waters tell you himself.
Over half of the jury's already been selected. We already know a lot about them, and it is hysterical. Before we tell you about them, remember that this is a Manhattan jury. It went 87% for Biden. And the judge who's overseeing the selection process is a Biden donor whose family was paid by the Biden campaign. Yesterday, 50 white women wearing masks fled the courtroom, claiming they couldn't be fair to Trump. Anyone wearing a mask at this point is not an impartial juror. Here's one white woman who works in cybersecurity who was excused. Listen.
Did you say you could be unbiased, though?
I did. It's very difficult for anyone really in this country to not come to this with prior opinions. I think we all have prior opinions about the defendant unless you've been like living in a cardboard box.
Show me a juror who says they can be unbiased towards Trump and I'll show you a liar.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Crazy. But there is more. There is more to this. And I mean, true. You cannot have a fair trial. Not with the people who live in New York, in Manhattan, because I'll tell you, I mean, it's like a breeding ground for wackadoodles. And not just New York, the West Coast too, Portland, Seattle, Los Angeles, San Francisco, huge. All kinds of problems with that. But it's nuts. But what's really even more nuts is the judge and Alvin Bragg. I mean, this is crazy, some of the things they're coming up with, because anybody with eyes that can see and ears that can hear and who has any sort of fair-mindedness knows this thing is corrupt to the core. Now, Trump derangement syndrome sufferers don't give a rip. They have a very weirded out sense of propriety, you know, between right and wrong. But they don't want to be fair. But I'll tell you, just listening to some of this, and I want to put a little bit of a legal spin on this, because Sean Hannity had a chance on his show, I think it was maybe last night, he had Professor Alan Dershowitz, Professor Emeritus from Harvard, and Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst. And if you haven't actually bothered to dig down deeper, and you're letting CNN and MSLSD spew out Democrat talking points and not getting to the real facts of the case, maybe you might want to learn something. So let's start with Greg Jarrett.
Alvin Bragg is taking a wrecking ball to justice. So the term fair trial in New York, that's an oxymoron. You know, threatening Trump with contempt, jail, oppressive gag order, it's blatantly unconstitutional. I mean, all of that is evidence, Sean, of a tyrannical, biased judge and a dishonest DA who knows his case is so anemic he might actually lose. So win or lose, Bragg and Judge Marchand are essentially colluding to keep Trump off the campaign trail, tied up in court to damage his election chances, which makes New York now, I think, beyond corrupt. It'll be a miracle if Trump can get a fair trial, which was the whole point of bringing the case. And then you factor in noxious, malignant media that openly cheers, as you pointed out, for the prosecution. And you have, Sean, a poison justice system that harbors contempt for the accused and presumes guilt. Now, having said that, there is a glimmer of optimism. There may be at least one fair juror who will see through Bragg's courtroom charade that's reliant on lying witnesses and contorting the law. Maybe those two lawyers will see it. Second of all, American voters, I think, resent this meddling in a presidential election, the effort to deprive them of the right to choose. This has always been a rush to convict on a contrived case that would be brought against no one else not named Trump. And I hope that people are smart enough to see it for what it is.
Yep, that is definitely the case. And I mean, it is hopeful, but unfortunately, there's enough people, not everybody, and I don't even think it's a majority, not anywhere close, but there are enough people in this country who aren't going to listen. They're not going to learn. No, as far as being fair-minded, because Trump derangement syndrome does many, many things, including y'all get messed up. You can't think clearly. Critical thinking is kind of, well, impaired at best. Completely fallen apart at worst. But the discussion continued with Professor Dershowitz. Now, Dershowitz, who is a Democrat, not a MAGA guy, but probably one of the few honest civil libertarians that are out there. And this is what he said during his portion of the interview with Sean Hannity.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm looking for a fair election. I'm an American voter who hasn't decided at this point who to vote for and who to vote against. I just want a fair election. And this case is depriving the American public. I'm speaking for the American public, not for either candidate. Depriving the American public of the right to have a fair election. President Trump should be in Pennsylvania today. There is a statute that gives him the right to leave the court any day. But the statute says, quote, in the absence of an objection by the people. In other words, the prosecution has a veto over the judge's decision whether to allow him to leave the courtroom in any given day. That is unconstitutional, and this case ought to be challenged. There ought to be a motion made by Trump's lawyers immediately under Section 5, 340.50, in which the judge has the power to allow him to leave the courtroom and campaign, but only if the prosecution agrees to it, which is clearly unconstitutional. The gag order is unconstitutional. You cannot prevent a defendant from attacking the witnesses, from attacking the judge's daughter, if the judge's daughter could be a basis for disqualification. Look, I agree with Greg. The American public is sick and tired of seeing the legal system weaponized. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, whether you're a Trump supporter or a Biden supporter, you should be equally appalled. We have the right to decide who to vote for without the thumb, or in this case, the elbow of the criminal justice system led by Democrats, in this case, the district attorney who campaigned on a promise to get Trump, essentially. We have a right not to have that election interference.
Do you believe
this case
the judge
is paradigmatic election interference? Yeah.
And do you believe the judge should have recused himself?
Absolutely. It's not even a close question. This daughter can make money. It's not a close call. She can make money. She's probably making money merely from the fact that he is sitting on the case. And if Trump loses as a result of the judge's rulings, she puts money in the bank. That's a clear conflict of interest.
Okay, there you go, Professor Dershowitz. Thank you, sir. It's real simple, folks. It's so simple, even my 5-year-old autistic great niece can figure it out. Okay? Conflict of interest. Big time conflict of interest. Juan Merchan, the judge in the case, has a daughter, an adult daughter, who works for a political consulting firm that has raised nearly $100 million for Democrats. And it's her daddy, the judge in the case, and she's making money off of it. Yeah, and there is even a New York law talking about 6 degrees of separation. As far as, I mean, this is so simple. You know, even a caveman can figure it out. You know, the old Geico commercial. Yeah. So, my friends, it is absolutely nothing short of pathetic that whatever happens in this case is going to be, you know, to keep Trump off the campaign trail. And the judge, in conjunction with the prosecution, you know, I mean, Trump can't even go to his son's Barron's graduation next month down in Palm Beach. Oh, he would, and just because the judge is an a-hole. I am in charge here. Right. Whatever. And you're also a corrupt jerkwad. And of course, Alvin Bragg, with his sorry fat self, pathetic black man, basically he's the male version of Letitia James. Oh, I'm going to go get Trump. I'm going to go get Trump. Trump helped build New York. But nope. The rule of law, fairness, completely are out the window. New York is turned into a septic, it's an S-hole. It is. And is it really any wonder that you have, again, people like Kevin O'Leary of Shark Tank, Mr. Wonderful. Nope, no more money in New York. He's not going to do it. Not spending no money. Grant Cardone, billionaire investor. Nope, he's told his people, hey, we're out of New York. Let's focus on Texas and Florida. And by the way, Mr. Cardone, you are more than welcome to come to Florida. We've got plenty of room. So yeah, this is ridiculous. And you've got Trump jurors who are just nuts. I mean, Trump derangement syndrome, again, makes you do stupid stuff. Trying to infiltrate the jury pool. And fortunately, Trump's lawyers are doing their homework. And yeah, and busting a whole bunch of them. But I'll tell you, it just absolutely blows my mind. It truly does. But I definitely want to pivot a little here, because I do not want to miss anything of, frankly, a bigger story than Trump getting screwed over by a Manhattan DA, and a corrupt Manhattan DA and a corrupt judge. I definitely don't want to forget Israel. It is on the world stage. Now, of course, Iran and its attack, its unprecedented attack on Israel from Iranian soil with the help of their surrogates like Hezbollah, the Houthi rebels, and Hamas. But now, here's the question that is on the minds of a lot of world leaders. What is Israel's next move? What are they going to do to counter and retaliate against the strike? Now, frankly, don't look to the Biden regime. No, don't do that. They're pushing for de-escalation. And Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, seems to be auditioning for becoming the Neville Chamberlain of the 21st century. And frankly, I don't think he really understands that. That's not something you really want to aspire to. I certainly wouldn't. But what's crazy? Yes. Now, Bibi Netanyahu has been in serious consultations ever since last Saturday with his war cabinet. They are going to strike back, and they need to strike back. Not for the sake of making, the Israeli people happy, but they need to teach Iran why Israel is the best of the best when it comes to counterterrorism. Now, I normally would take a look at the American press for this, but then I thought, wait a minute. Let's try something a little different. I decided to look to the foreign press. Now, an article in the BBC, from the BBC, and the headline, Iranians on edge as leaders say, Tel Aviv is our battleground, quote unquote. Now, this does not help, throwing it all those missiles at Tel Aviv, but I wanted to get the perspective of of the foreign press to see how they're covering this. And looking at this from a BBC reporter, and I just want to read a little bit of this, a little bit of this article, because it is interesting their perspective when it comes to this whole situation between Israel and Iran. Tehran is tense 2 days after Iran's unprecedented attack, direct attack on Israel. Worried about war and its impact on Iran's already flailing economy, a significant portion of Iranians oppose what they see as the reckless adventurism of the country's elite Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which fired more than 300 drones and missiles Saturday night. This story was done on, was put up a day ago. Now, here we go. In a letter sent to BBC Persian, a long list of Iranian activists, both inside the country and abroad, criticize the IRGC's actions and saying no to warmongering. Many Iranians also see the Iran-Israel confrontation now emerging from the shadows as being orchestrated by the Iranian government rather than the reflective will of the Iranian people. Now, right there, just those few little paragraphs tell me that, hey, it really makes me wonder, why did they even get into this attack in the first place? Really? Because they're getting support from Russia, getting money, you know, getting some of their oil. But the biggest thing that drove me nuts is how much has the Biden regime given the Iranians as far as billions of dollars in money, billions of dollars to go for weapons, to send it to the Houthi rebels, to Hezbollah in Lebanon, and to Hamas. We, the American taxpayer, are funding this because Biden thought, you know, we have to make friends with Iran and whatever. I mean, this is why people say that Joe Biden is Barack Obama's third term. Now, what makes me scratch my head is, why are we so dang accommodating to Iran? Now, I can understand why Biden wants to get all this money to the Ukraine, and I've got a story about that, but letting Iran have access to all that money, what the Sam hell did he think they were going to do with it? They're not going to help their people. For example, just a little bit more from this BBC article. And it has to deal with what's going on the streets of Iran. This perception is underscored by a heavy police presence on the streets of Tehran, ostensibly about enforcing strict Islamic dress codes requiring women to cover their hair, which many suspect is mainly about crushing any possible protests. We had an opportunity to help Iran back in 2009. Nope, absolutely not. Not from Barack Obama. Nope. So now we're at this point where it's really brinksmanship between Israel and Iran, because Iran has threatened more retaliatory strikes if Israel goes after them. The United States is nowhere to be found, really, except to try to put pressure on the Israelis to say, nope, don't do this. When Bibi needs to just tell Joe Biden to sit down, take a nap, and shut up. Let me protect my country and my people, period. So if Israel wants to go and say, okay, you know, we're going to go after Iran's nuclear infrastructure. And if the United States and the United Nations have a problem with it, well, screw them and the horses they rode in on. Because this is about national defense and national sovereignty. And frankly, I think Bibi has had enough. He's had enough with the foolishness. So yeah, who knows what's going to go on there. This is kind of a to-be-determined situation. And, well, let's see what Israel does in retaliation. Because if they don't retaliate, it's going to embolden Iran and other terrorist groups, their surrogates, to go after even more Israeli targets or Western targets. They still have they probably have killed the rest of their hostages, American and Israeli. Who knows? Hamas is not to be trusted. They are to be eliminated. And as far as the pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas crowd, folks, let's get real here. They are organized. They are financed by left-wing millionaires and billionaires. But who knows? Let's see what happens as far as that goes. But one other thing I want to get into today. Now, here you have our Congress, the House of Representatives. Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, seems to be hell-bent for leather to get that $60 billion extra dollars to the Ukraine, which we cannot afford. So, but now I read this story, and it was mentioned also by the New York Times, that Ukrainians, young men, are dodging the draft. They're doing whatever they possibly can to get out of the country because they don't want to fight Zelensky's war. They don't want to do that. And they are doing whatever they can to say, no, we're not going. And these families of these Ukrainian men, young men, they're like, shoot, they're hanging out in bars. They're leaving the country. They're out of here. They're essentially dodging their own country's draft. So we want to give $60 billion U.S. dollars, your money, folks, which we really don't have, because we're still dealing with a $2.5 trillion deficit. And now we want to give this money to a country where it's a mess? I mean, talk about severely dysfunctional? Ay, 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 ay. And we have people like the Democrats and whatever wanting to give money to the Ukraine, but they want to package it in a deal that we give money to Israel, we give it to the Ukraine, and also to Taiwan. What? No. And apparently, it's just absolutely... What is it that Mike Johnson cannot understand? That's my question. And I don't think I'll ever get an answer to it, but you know... This is going to be one of those to-be-continued type of situations, and frankly, I'm tired. I don't want to jack up my blood pressure anymore, but I just want to say thank you and call it a day today. As always, please, if you'd like to subscribe to the podcast, like, follow, get notified. We're on all podcasting platforms. Tell your friends. And thank you so much for the growth that we have had, because right now on feedspot.com, where they rank black conservative podcasters, we are now at number 9. We are top 10, and it's only because of you. Because without you, there is no me. And with that in mind, thank you so much again for listening. I will be back tomorrow because we've got plenty more to talk about. And as always, my friends, God bless, take care, and Patriots come in all colors.